the movement to try to undertake large projects has been a bit troublesome for churches ever since the beginning of the Restoration Movement. One of the things that we've seen was an effort to create some institutions that could oversee the work that people were trying to do. One of them was the American Christian Missionary Society, the American Bible Society. There are a number of state missionary societies that were created, and all of them were created in an effort to, for instance, preach the gospel overseas, which is it's an expensive proposition. And many times an individual congregation doesn't have the financial wherewithal to take that on. People who are going overseas want to know that they have a steady source of income. You don't want to go overseas and have churches call you up and say, "I'm sorry, we can't send you the funds this week." I mean, here you are, thousands of miles from home, you're in a foreign country, and you have no real way of getting back home. And I know that that's the case. When I was preaching in Alaska, I was being supported, being helped by several churches in the lower 48. And one of those churches that was providing a sizable amount of my support called me up on Saturday and said, "Oh, next month we're not going to be able to send you the funds that we thought we were going to be able to send." And that kind of put me in a real bind, because I had bought a house and had to have some sort of way to make the payments. And that all worked out in the end. But we have to look at this from the perspective of the person who's going overseas to preach. Maybe he's going to Japan, maybe he's going to Argentina. And we're not talking about somebody that's making a trip over there for a couple of weeks and then they're coming back. We're talking about someone that's moving there, that's going to be continuously on the ground in those places. These little 2 week trips that people take have a good use, but they're really not what churches need. When we talk about trying to undertake tasks that are bigger than the individual congregation can handle, we of course have to be concerned about all of those things. So because there was such opposition to the creation of institutions outside of the church that were doing the work that God wanted the churches to do, there was an effort to create a response, and that response was a sponsoring church arrangement. This began to be seen really at the end of World War II. What has happened is Germany has been defeated, Japan has been defeated, and the American churches wanted to do what they could to make sure that evangelists could go to Japan or Germany or any of the other countries, sometimes Italy. We did send a lot of folks to Italy. But when we started talking about doing this, it was a very expensive proposition, and there just weren't many churches. There weren't many congregations that could undertake to do this on their own. So the Broadway Church of Christ in Lubbock, Texas, decided that they would sponsor a preacher in Germany. Well, it turns out that they sponsored several preachers who were in Germany, and other churches would send funds to the Broadway Church of Christ, and then the Broadway Church of Christ would hire preachers and send them over to Germany. The Union Avenue Church of Christ in Memphis, Tennessee, did the same thing with Japan, again, following World War II. And it wasn't just overseas evangelism. There were some opportunities to do some things here that, again, were pretty expensive, but things that people wanted to see happen. Television and radio was just becoming widely available, and because it was just becoming widely available, it was very expensive to sponsor a 30-minute program on television or even on radio. And so the Fifth and Highland Church of Christ in Abilene, Texas, started what was called the Herald of Truth in 1952. And you can read about the Herald of Truth. I've put a link here. That the Herald of Truth is still operating today. You can still go there and you can read about what they're doing on television and radio in the U.S. Now, if you're going to sponsor or buy 30 minutes of time on NBC or ABC or CBS, and remember, this is back in the 1950s when there were really only three radio or three television stations. So you had to agree that you would be on the hook for all of the expenses that were associated with having a 30-minute television program. And that was very expensive. And most congregations couldn't undertake that by themselves. And you had to have somebody that was willing to stand up and say, we will sign on the dotted line. And we will be the responsible party. So that's how the Herald of Truth got started back in 1952. The Highland Avenue Church of Christ in Abilene decided that they would undertake to do that. In 1991, there was an effort to create mass mailings that would go out to every home in the entire United States. And they would present the gospel in printed form to every home in the United States. Now, again, that's a pretty expensive undertaking. You have to be willing to say, we will underwrite this, because you don't want, you do look at what Jesus said about counting the cost. You don't want to start something that you can't finish. Or you give yourself a black eye. So the Sycamore Church of Christ in Cookeville, Tennessee, sponsored this effort, mass mailing effort, One Nation Under God. They were going to mail to every home in the United States. Now, they did mass mail. It wasn't very successful. And I don't know a whole lot about what has happened to the One Nation Under God effort. Then on top of that, you had disaster relief. You had terrible storms that would wipe out parts of the country, and you needed some way to respond. And in this case, it was an effort to get everyone together so that you could respond in the same kind of way that the American Red Cross can respond. You don't get little piecemeal efforts with nobody knowing what they're doing. And so the elders at the Castle Hills Church of Christ in Vidalia, Ohio, decided that they would be responsible. They would sponsor what they called a Church of Christ Disaster Response Team. And they have purchased mobile hospitals. They have mobile kitchens. They respond to natural disasters the same way that the American Red Cross responds to natural disasters. This is an expensive undertaking. And because it was beyond the means of any single congregation, a lot of people felt like the way to respond to that was to have one congregation agree to be the sponsoring church, and other congregations would send funds to that congregation. And the elders at that congregation would see to the distribution of the funds. They would be responsible for how those funds were spent. This avoided having to create an outside institution. The people that were responsible were not an outside institution. It was the eldership in a local congregation. Well, there were some problems that arose with this as well. And I must say, I want to give credit to Dick Blackford. He put together a lot of these slides. He has more slides in his presentation than I do in this one. he's put together a lot of slides, and I lifted a lot of these slides verbatim from his presentation. Sometimes I got them from other presentations. Sometimes I changed them a little bit, but I do want to give credit to Dick Blackford for putting the majority of this together. He quotes Lewis Hale, who is a preacher in the Church of Christ. These are churches known as sponsoring churches, and he tries to define what that is. Feeling that they're not financially able to carry on a certain program single-handedly, they invite sister congregations to share the expense of that work. They receive funds from other churches, add these to whatever funds they themselves provide for the work, and then they become wholly responsible for the oversight of the work. Those churches that are sending funds to the sponsoring church do not oversee the work that is done. They do not oversee how their funds are spent. The sponsoring church takes on that responsibility. Graphically, this is what it looks like. A number of different congregations send funds, usually to a large church that has the ability to kind of oversee this kind of massive effort. And then that congregation determines who they're going to support, where they're going to support them. In many cases, we've said it was Germany and Japan, how they're going to help them teach in that place. It could be that they're going to use radio. It could be that they're going to use television. It could be that they're going to use printed materials, but the sponsoring church oversees the work. Donor churches make funds available to the sponsoring church, and the elders in the sponsoring church then determine how those funds are going to be spent. Sponsoring churches assume a work that is beyond their own ability. This congregation takes on a work that they are going to be responsible for that they cannot financially support. The second element of the sponsoring church arrangement is that contributing churches send money to the sponsoring church. And the third element, sponsoring church has exclusive control over the work. Now, this fourth idea is an important idea in and of itself. The first three just deal with kind of the mundane, how we're going to do this. The fourth point is that all congregations bear an equal responsibility to the work. If Coburg Road decides to send funds to South Salem, and South Salem is going to be in charge of evangelizing Italy, that doesn't relieve the church at Coburg Road of the responsibility that they have themselves to evangelize Italy. So all of the churches that are involved in this have an equal responsibility to the work. The only thing that's unequal is they have an unequal ability. And when we look at the life of the Apostle Paul, he talked about churches that had very little ability and they still supported him. He talked about churches that had a lot of ability and they supported him even more. The responsibility for doing the work falls evenly on all of the churches, but the opportunity that they have is dependent upon, in many cases, their financial ability to do that. The work of many churches, this is the fifth point, the work of many churches is supervised by the elders of one church. And so this calls into question the whole idea of autonomous congregations. And the result is that you have brotherhood elders who oversee brotherhood work in a brotherhood organization or a collectivity of churches. Does that make sense? Do you see how the fourth and fifth points of this are critical as far as the non-institutional groups were concerned? Well, that's where the problems arose, is the fourth and fifth essential elements in the sponsoring church arrangement. Mark Roberts, another preacher in the Church of Christ, had this to say: the sponsoring church arrangement creates a church mutual fund. This is just a kind of an illustration that helps me to understand what's going on. Churches pool their money together. The elders of the sponsoring church manage the money. The key is that while a church is in this fund, this thing that's like a mutual fund, they have no control or oversight of their money. Just like when I decide to participate in a mutual fund, I send my money to a mutual fund manager, and I don't get to have any say in how that mutual fund manager uses the money that I send him. My only choice is to withdraw from the mutual fund. I can just stop participating. But beyond that, I have no control. The elders of the sponsoring church are the ones that do all the deciding. They decide who to put on the TV program, what to write in the mass mail out brochure. In other words, they make all the decisions that each local church's elders are supposed to be making. All the elders of the paying churches, and he uses paying churches, contributing churches, I've used donor churches, all the elders of the paying churches can do is get in or get out. But while in, they have given up their control, they have forfeited their autonomy. Autonomy means independence and self-control. When you've lost your control, you've lost your autonomy. That's the problem. In Acts 14, verse 23, when the Apostle Paul was making his second missionary journey, he revisited the churches that he had established or helped to establish. And in Acts 14, verse 23, says when they had appointed elders in every church, having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed. So every church had elders. Now, I don't know exactly whether that means every church had men that were qualified to be elders, or whether it means that most of the churches where they went, they appointed elders. It could mean that in every case, there were elders that were appointed in each congregation. Now, we know that sometimes there are churches that exist today that don't have elders. And that's not to say that they are not a functioning congregation of God's people. It's just to say that they don't have elders. Each of those groups of elders, and remember, there are always multiple elders in any local congregation, each of those groups of elders takes heed to themselves. This is what Paul said to them, to the Ephesian elders in Acts 20, verse 26, or verse 28. They take heed to themselves and to all the flock, among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. So the church here at Coburg Road has four elders. They oversee the work that the Coburg Road Church does. They do not oversee the work that South Salem does. Even when South Salem had no elders, they don't oversee the work that Market Street does. They may contribute to the expense of preaching in South Salem. And I was supported when I was preaching in Alaska by the church in different places. When I was preaching in Brookings, the church at Covert Road helped to support me. Brookings didn't have elders. That didn't mean that the Covert Road elders assumed the oversight of the group in Brookings. They didn't. They oversaw their funds and they chose to expend them on me. So every eldership is independent. Every eldership is equal. Every eldership is autonomous. And every eldership is sufficient to accomplish the work that God gave them to do. 1 Peter 5 at verses 1 through 3, Peter, of course, is one of the elders in the place where he was. He said to the elders, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, acting as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. So the elders in a particular local congregation, as I understand the biblical information, now this is clear, as I understand the biblical information, the church at Covert Road has elders. The elders oversee the work at Covert Road. They do not oversee the work in other places. Questions? So there's kind of the biblical information that informs the way that elderships should work. And as you can see, this sponsoring church arrangement is in contrast to what I see the biblical information being. And this was the argument that was made by the non-institutional wing, the non-institutional groups that had kind of separated from the mainstream Church of Christ. And we talked about that before. So can the elders delegate their authority to oversee to somebody else, the local church's elders? Can they delegate it to deacons within the local congregation again? I would argue that they can. That the apostles were and the elders were in Jerusalem. There was a need to oversee the distribution of food to the Grecian widows. They appointed deacons. They delegated the authority to oversee that work to those deacons. That was fine. Again, we're within the local congregation. Can they delegate the authority or the responsibility to oversee other members? Could the church here decide, well, we don't want to oversee Dean. He's kind of a rake and a just a rebel. We don't want to oversee him, so we're going to tell the church in South Salem that they have to oversee Dean. They can't do that. They can't delegate the responsibility to oversee the money. They can't delegate the responsibility to oversee edification or evangelism or benevolence. Now, if the need becomes so great that the elders here at Covert Road have to ask other churches to help meet that need, then the church here at Covert Road will take those funds that are distributed, that are collected by other churches, and they will then take control of those funds and they'll see to the distribution of those funds. But there's no picture anywhere in the New Testament, in my mind, of local church elders ceding their responsibility to sponsoring church elders. I don't think that they have the ability to do that. They can't say, you know, Dean is just out of hand, and we're going to have to ask the elders at South Salem to fix this problem. That wasn't what happened at the Jerusalem conference in Acts 15. A lot of people would try to argue that that's what happened in the Jerusalem conference. And that's not it. What happened was some people came from Jerusalem down to Antioch. They started saying that you have to be circumcised in order to be saved. And the elders in Jerusalem sent us out to say that. So the church in Jerusalem said, wait a minute, that doesn't square with anything we know. We need to talk to the elders at the church in Jerusalem and find out if they really did send you out to say that. So that's what they did. They went and talked to the apostles and elders in Jerusalem, and they said, did you really send those guys out to say this? And of course, their response was that we didn't. But churches cannot delegate, or local elderships cannot delegate their responsibility for oversight to anyone else. That's why it's such a daunting task to take on the eldership. You take on the responsibility for those people that are within your charge, and you have to give an answer for those people that are in your charge. So that's why becoming an elder is such a hard decision that's fraught with all kinds of responsibility. Kind of like being married, you know, once you're married, you take on responsibility to care for your wife. You can't give that up to anybody else. That's your responsibility. Now, you may have to ask for help, but it's still your responsibility. So the question is, when other churches collected funds, and we know that they did from reading the record in 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, when other churches collected funds and sent those funds to the elders in Judea because of the famine that was happening there, is that an example of a sponsoring church? I don't think it is. I don't think it's an analogous situation. I don't think Jerusalem became the sponsoring church. There are a number of assumptions that you would have to make to say that Jerusalem was the sponsoring church. The churches in Corinth, or the church in Corinth, the churches in Macedonia, sent funds to the elders in Judea. Now, that included the elders in Jerusalem, but they sent funds to the elders in Judea. To say that they sent all of the funds to Jerusalem and Jerusalem distributed the funds then throughout the region of Judea, even to those churches that they didn't have any oversight over, you would have to say that Jerusalem was the only congregation in Judea that had elders. And I don't think that's the case. I think Acts 14:23 would argue, in fact, that it's not the case. Now, some folks would argue that Jerusalem was a sponsoring church. That's what they see in the record in Acts 11, in Acts 12, in Galatians 1, in 1 Corinthians 16. I don't think that that was the case. But that's the argument that they made. It's not as if those folks that supported the idea of a sponsoring church did so without any biblical information. I think they misunderstood the biblical information, but that's what they were trying to do. The entire argument that Jerusalem was a sponsoring church says that all the relief was sent to the elders in Jerusalem. None of the churches in Judea had elders, and that's the only place that Paul went when he took the funds from Corinth and Macedonia and the churches in Asia and took those funds to the churches in Judea. We don't know that that's the case, but that's what happened. it has to be argued in order to say that Jerusalem is a sponsoring church. They say that there's no mention of elders in any church before this happened. The churches in Judea, they talk about Lydda and Sharon and Joppa. But the biblical record says that there were elders in every church. It doesn't indicate that there were needy folks only in Jerusalem, nor does it indicate that there were only elders in Jerusalem. But the record indicates that there were needy folks in Judea because of a widespread famine, that other churches helped them to meet the need that existed there. It had gotten beyond what they could do. Now, the church in Jerusalem did some incredible things to meet the need that existed in Jerusalem. If you read the first few chapters in the book of Acts, you find people who had land or houses, they sold it, they gave the money to the apostles, distribution was made to every man that had need. I don't believe that they were being stingy about using the funds that were available to them. I think they used everything that they had. And the need simply was too big for them to manage on their own. So they had to have other churches help them to meet that need. And they did. They sent the money to elders. The elders then made distribution as was appropriate. And they probably did it through the agency of the deacons. Questions about what was going on in Jerusalem or in Judea. Do you see the argument that they're trying to make that Jerusalem was the sponsoring church? And do you see the shortcomings in that argument, at least from my perspective?
I see the shortcomings of that argument. But one of the things that was so, I think, important to those people who were sending money back to Jerusalem was that in their time of need, Jerusalem had already given them at the day of Pentecost and afterwards, had already dug down into their pockets and had given to all of the people in the outer regions the gospel.
Right.
And so they really felt a need to be able to give back to them.
Right. It wasn't as if Jerusalem was the mother church or anything like that, but they had been, the evangelists had been supported so that they could take the gospel out to Asia, and Asia then said, you helped us, we'll help you. See, that makes perfect sense to me. Other comments? Anybody else? Well, the next argument that's made in support of the sponsoring church has to do with the church in Philippi. And there's a bit of a confusion that exists when the Apostle Paul left Philippi. He said that you supported me and it was only you that supported me in preaching the gospel. That's Philippians, the fourth chapter, verses 15 through 17. Later, as he comments on the situation, he also says, I took funds from other churches so that I could preach the gospel freely to you. In fact, the way the Apostle Paul puts it in 2 Corinthians 11, I robbed other churches to make the gospel freely available to you. So when Paul was getting funds, we know that he got funds from multiple churches. Were those funds funneled through Philippi so that the church in Philippi is a model of a sponsoring church? Well, again, I think this argument that is made in favor of a sponsoring church arrangement falls prey to some of the same shortcomings. It's mostly because of assumptions. The argument that's made regarding Philippi was that the funds that Philippi sent to Paul was the same support or the same funds that Paul robbed from other churches. And that's a kind of a way of expressing taking support in hyperbole. I don't think Paul went in six guns blazing and robbed other churches. I think what he's saying is other churches helped to support me so that I could preach there. But he says Philippi was the only church that helped me. And the assumption is that when he started preaching, Philippi was the only church that sent him funds, and it continued to be that way throughout the entirety of Paul's preaching career, at least in that place. Both of those statements could be true. Paul initially received funds only from Philippi, and then later he received funds from other churches as well. So the whole argument, I think, hinges on an assumption that really isn't warranted. It's not a necessary inference. It may be an inference, but it's not a necessary inference. And that's why it's important that we think about necessary inferences. Remember, I think autonomy is an important concept in God's overall organization of the church, the condition or quality of being self-governing. That's why when they first established the Springfield Presbytery, which was an association of churches, they then looked at that and Barton W. Stone said, there is no biblical model for this. Churches are independent. And so they wrote the last will and testament of the Springfield Presbytery. Remember, they've been kicked out of the presbytery that they were in, the Pennsylvania Presbytery. They've been kicked out of that. So they went out, they built their own presbytery, 26 churches gathered together, and they looked at what they had created, and they said, we don't have a biblical model for this. So we're going to have to give this up. Autonomy is self-government, the right of self-government, self-determination, it's independence. Congregations are independent. That doesn't mean that we might not both be doing the same thing, but we are independent. And when I was preaching in Brookings, to the best of my knowledge, I was the first preacher in Oregon that was supported to preach entirely by churches in Oregon. Coburg Road helped to support me. Cottage Grove helped to support me. Market Street in Salem helped to support me. And then what happened was, I lost the support that I was getting from Cottage Grove, and because I had a long-term relationship with a church in Sunnyvale, California, they said, we'll take care of it. They stepped in and picked that up. But Coburg Road, Cottage Grove, and Springfield were all at Springfield, South Salem, or Market Street in Salem, were all supporting me. They were all supporting the same person. But each one of those elderships had the responsibility to oversee how those funds were being spent. And that's why when we were supporting people to preach in other places, you came into the building right there in the lobby. We had letters that were informing the elders here about the work that an individual was doing when we were helping to support them. And the elders here individually had a responsibility to oversee him. Now, we weren't the only church that was helping Ron Koch preach. We weren't the only church that was helping, and now his name escapes me. Lenny, what was the name of the guy that we supported in Colorado?
Clayton.
Yeah.
Clayton Johnson.
When we were helping to support it, we weren't the only church that was helping to support them. But we couldn't say to another church, okay, you oversee him and we'll just accept your word for it. We couldn't do that. Church supported evangelism, I think this is the model that we see. Various churches were supporting an individual. Sometimes a single church would support an individual. Sometimes they would support a local congregate, a located minister. Sometimes they would preach the gospel themselves. They could do it through printed material. They could do it through a minister. This is, I think, the congregational model of supporting evangelism. And I've sent all of these slides to Jerry, and he'll have them up on the website. So take some time, read through these different scriptures. I wish we had the time to read through them all tonight, but we really don't. I think for the most part, they're passages that are familiar to most of you. But by all means, get a hold of these slides and look at these different passages and see if you can't divine some sort of an understanding out of that. The sponsoring church arrangement, just to summarize what was happening, the sponsoring church determines what the work that the congregations were going to do, when the congregations would do the work, how the congregations would do it, and who the congregations would use to do it. Remember, we started with the Herald of Truth, and that was supported by the Highland Church of Christ in Texas, in Abilene. They determined that they were going to have Basil Barrett Baxter as the speaker on the Herald of Truth radio program. And if you were supporting the Herald of Truth radio program, you didn't have any say about whether Basil, I have such a hard time saying his name, Basil Barrett Baxter. You didn't have any say. He was a great preacher. I've heard some of his sermons. He was an eloquent man, but you had no say. The Highland Road Church had all of the say about what was going on with the Herald of Truth. Autonomy and evangelism. Again, I think this is the biblical model. Every local church selected a preacher. Every local church defined the territory where they wanted the preacher to work. And it may not have been locally. The church in Anchorage helped to support me when I was preaching in Palmer. And you know, it's just the next town up the road, about 45 miles. The local church sent out the preacher. They paid my salary. The local church sent support directly to the preacher. They didn't send it through an intermediary. And they had the responsibility. Here's the problem. The sponsoring church arrangement creates interdependence. The sponsoring church depends on other congregations for funds, and those other congregations depend on the sponsoring church for the oversight of their funds. I think that's a non-biblical model. Now, we talk about how this all works out and how it morphs into different things. Remember, this sponsoring church arrangement was an outgrowth of some arguments that people had with establishing institutions. Well, you had other folks who were willing to say, you know, there are preachers in the field, and somebody needs to be responsible for determining what those preachers are preaching. So we will take it upon ourselves to create a questionnaire that we will send to all preachers. We'll get that back, and then we will tell other congregations whether they ought to be supporting that preacher or not. Now, that happened to me when I was preaching in Alaska. There was a great deal of discussion about marriage and divorce, and there was a circulated group of questions. There were 26 questions that were circulated by a group of elders in Texas, and everybody was made to fill those out. And then once they got those responses back, they communicated those responses and recommendations to every other local congregation. I got in a lot of trouble because I refused to answer the questionnaire, because none of the elders that sent me that questionnaire were people that oversaw the work that I was doing. And because of that, there were groups that stopped supporting me when I was preaching in Alaska. We give up the responsibility to oversee too lightly. And that should never happen. Okay, I'm done. I finished the whole thing. Any questions at this point? So don't fall prey to the notion that if money's not changing hands, you're not overseeing. Think about that very carefully. You know, this goes back to the time when the old Gospel Guardian said, you know, we're going to examine preachers, and no preacher who doesn't meet with our approval can be hired in the state of Tennessee or the state of Texas. That was a group of editors, individuals. Those weren't even elders. Those were a group of editors who said, we're going to make determinations for elderships. And that should not have happened either. But remember, we talked about the journals, and it's, you know, I think the opinion that was expressed by one man is probably right on. We don't have popes and we don't have bishops. We have editors.
So the idea of pooling our resources to make a greater effect makes a whole lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
See, philanthropic organizations do that all the time. That's the way they're organized. But when we superimpose that upon the church and what God designed for the church, we have a problem.
Right.
And I think that's what we see biblically.
Right. And a group of individuals has no limitation. They can pool their resources.
Absolutely.
They can build a publishing house.
Sure.
And then that group of individuals publishes material.
Yes. A dear friend of ours created Sacred Selections.
Right.
An adoption group that helps to families who are Christians to adopt children, and we're the beneficiaries of that.
one of our grandchildren, is adopted through that agency.
Right.
And that's a group of Christians who've done this separate from the church.
Right. Right. The church is not involved. And it's a group of Christians established, for instance, Florida College. They have never taken funds from churches to operate Florida College. They take funds from individuals. They charge tuition to students who go there. And there may be individuals who decide we're going to help this person go to Florida College. We're going to help support them while they go to Florida College. That's fine. But we're not involving the church in doing it. And you have to remember, Florida College is an institution that exists on its own. It can make whatever decisions it wants to make. But it doesn't solicit funds from churches. York College, on the other hand, does solicit funds from churches. I have a problem with York College. I have a problem, as if I'm the Pope. I can see a problem with York College soliciting funds from churches to do the work that the church ought to be doing. I don't see a problem, on the other hand, with Florida College soliciting funds from individuals to do the work that individuals ought to do. So it's possible to pool our funds. Now, anytime you pool money, and anytime you have a board of directors, they are tempted to make decisions that you might not agree with. So just understand that. You can petition them for redress of grievances if you want, but more than likely, if they make decisions that you disagree with, your only option is to pull out. Because you know that that board of directors makes decisions. It's also possible for a church, and I'll just put this out there, something to consider. I didn't really include it here. It's possible that a church has to care for widows indeed, the group that's described in 2 Timothy. And the church may not have the ability to provide the nursing services that are necessary to care for those widows indeed. So the church could place that individual in a facility where they could receive that kind of care, and the church could buy it. So we pay for services. We're not supporting the facility, we're purchasing services. It would be possible for a group of individuals to establish a hospital, much like the Catholic hospitals that dot the entire country. It would be possible for a group of individuals to establish a hospital and for the church at Covert Road to say, we have someone who needs care and we're going to help them get the care. So we provide that care by purchasing it from this hospital. We're not sending funds to the hospital to care for somebody. We're purchasing a service. And that's the difference. The church may decide that they're going to purchase books for everyone in the congregation because they think that's a worthwhile thing to do. They think that it's going to help us grow. And so they purchase books from Truth Bookstore. They're purchasing a service. They're not supporting this outside publishing group. They're purchasing a product that that outside publishing group created. Now, I think that means that you don't overpay for that service because it comes from a Christian publishing house. Just like, you know, I buy cookies when the Girl Scouts sell cookies. Yes, I'm giving money to the Girl Scouts because I could go to the store and I could buy exactly the same cookie for about half of what the Girl Scouts charge. Well, you can't buy Thin Mints. Thin Mints, they've got a corner on that market. But for the most part, you can buy the cookies in the store. You buy the cookies from the Girl Scouts at an inflated price because you want to support the Girl Scouts and their mission. You buy the service at a reasonable price when you're just buying the service. So the fact that we might pay the medical bills of a person who needed to get medical care at Riverbend Hospital, which is part of the Peace Health Group, it's owned by a Catholic church, doesn't mean that we're supporting the Catholic Church. We're buying a service at a reasonable, at the going rate.